May it please the Court. Missouri law has a presumption that the actions of its government will be open and transparent. Meetings, records, and votes are to be held in open session or considered open unless there's a very limited statutory exception. In this case, the Cape County Commission violated the Sunshine Law. There are no issues of material fact in dispute, and Mr. Purcell is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. It's important to note at the outset that the Cape County Commission, as a public governmental body, has the burden of persuasion in this matter. It's their burden to show that their actions during the April 17, 2008 meeting complied with the Sunshine Law. At the trial court level, they did not meet that burden, and the trial court erred, and this court should reverse the trial court and enter judgment in favor of Mr. Purcell. The commission violated the Sunshine Law in two broad ways. Their notice violated the Sunshine Law, and their meeting during April 17, 2008 also violated the Sunshine Law, the closed session portion. To begin with, their notice violated the Sunshine Law because it failed to reasonably advise the public as to what they were going to discuss. This is a somewhat unique case in that we have a audio recording that's on file with the court. It's in the legal file. We don't have to depend on witness testimony as to what was discussed. We know what was discussed. It's part of the record. And when the court listens to that recording, it can see that this was a roving commission talking about a wide range of topics that were not covered in its notice. These topics included the discussion of the county auditor's inappropriate use of county equipment, the procedure for granting easements, the procedure for the sale.
Now, did they have a motion to go into executive session to discuss certain topics that would not be covered by Sunshine? And if so, what did that motion say?
Well, there was a motion made to go into closed session. They properly went into closed session, but during the closed session, they discussed a wide range.
During closed session, when you go into closed session, you're supposed to say in your motion what topics will be discussed, that you can discuss employment issues or lawsuits or things that are not appropriate for the Sunshine. Did they do that? Did their motion state those what they're going to discuss in general terms in going into closed session?
Well, yes, their motion said that they were going into closed session to discuss certain topics, that if they had stayed on those actual topics, that would have been proper for closed session.
Okay.
Just like, now to go back to their notice though, a notice also has to cite the specific statutory reasons for going into closed session. This notice did not even cite to correct law or existing law. It cited statutes that do not exist. It cited to one of the topics that they could go into closed session was ostensibly to discuss legislation. Well, legislation.
But the reasons they gave are valid reasons to go into closed session. But it's your argument that they just listed a broad range of topics and didn't anticipate actually reaching all of those. So it was too broad to give proper notice, wouldn't they?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there anything in the case law or in the statute that says how specific you have to be if it's required that you that you can't give a list of broad categories, even if you're that it makes it a notice improper if it suggests that you're going to cover certain topics in the closed session and then you don't end up covering them all?
Well, no, but the plain language of the statute. First of all, we have two separate portions of the meeting and two separate portions of the notice in this case. We have the open portion, and an open notice must reasonably advise the public as to what is going to be discussed. Mm-hmm. In this case, everything that was discussed at this meeting should have been held in open session. And therefore, there should have been a tentative agenda as to every topic discussed. That was not placed. Taking that aside, if you are going to have a closed session, the statute specifically says, 610.022, says you have to cite to the specific statutory reason for going into closed session.
You're saying they did cite to their reasons, but they cited to some additional ones, too, that they ended up not discussing. And I'm wondering if there's any law or statutory provisions that says that makes it invalid as long as they did cover the things that they, in fact, did discuss. I know you said that's the second problem. You think they didn't. But I'm not clear why your notice argument is an independent reason.
Well, if you're giving notice of everything,
they gave notice of five things, right?
The five most common reasons that a public governmental body ever goes into closed session: real estate, personnel, hiring and firing. That's it. They're not going to go into closed session to discuss test scores. This is not a school board. This is not, you know, this is a county commission. They cite to the same five things every time.
And I'm asking for your help, and is there some citation or some cases or some statutes or something to suggest what the notice should do and how specific or broad it should be to comply with the law?
Well, I can only say that the notice must do what the closed statute says, which is cite to the specific statutory reason. I can't speak to other factual situations. I can tell you that in this case, the notice violated the law.
And what you're trying to do here is to void any action taken by the commission. Is that correct?
No. We are not trying to void any action taken. We are simply asking for a declaration that the notice violated the law and that the closed portion of the meeting violated the law.
And I guess I'm getting to whether or not there's a mens rea necessary. And, you know, whether or not we need to find purposely or whether or not we're looking for any kind of monetary damages against the commission as a whole?
No. There are no allegations of a knowing or purposeful violation. There is no request for civil penalties, and there's no request for attorney's fees.
Can you address for me what 610.027 talks about the remedies and procedures for violations? And I don't see that what you're asking for is an available remedy under that statute. It talks about what you can do if there's a knowing or purposeful violation, which you're not alleging. And it says if something was done in violation of the Sunshine Law, then you can, the court can void any action after it does a balancing test of the interest that would be affected if they voided it against the concerns that the Sunshine Law not be violated. But you're not asking for that relief. You're not asking that records that were secret, which should not have been, be made public. You're simply asking for a declaration that someone previously violated the Sunshine Law. And I'm not clear where that is an available avenue of relief for you, where you're not also asking to void an action or to reveal documents or to find something willful, and therefore you get damages and attorney's fees.
Well, I think the statute 610.027 specifically allows for judicial enforcement of the Sunshine Law.
I agree, but you're not how are you enforcing it here?
Well, and when you look at the penalty phase or the penalty provisions of the statute, it specifically says that one of the things that a court is to consider in assessing civil penalties are the mental state and previous Sunshine Law violations.
So you are asking for civil penalties? That's what I'm
trying to... No, so we're not asking for civil penalties. But if this court should declare the law means what it means...
Can I back you up a little bit?
Sure.
You're asking for a declaratory judgment.
Correct.
And so what your contention is that under 610.027, the remedies provided by this section against public governmental bodies shall be in addition to those provided by any other provision of law.
Correct.
So a declaratory judgment would fit into that. Is that what you're arguing?
That's correct. A declaratory judgment that they violated.
That someone previously, but not what the law means, not what the statute means, but that they had previously violated it.
Right. That their actions in April 2008 violated the Sunshine Law. That's correct. And it's not just the notice that violated the Sunshine Law, but the entire, about 75% of this four-hour meeting was a closed session discussion that should not have taken place in closed session. And it's very simple. The relief requested is declare that that meeting violated the law. Declare that a county commission, a public governmental body, cannot go on a roving discussion and discuss all manner of things.
Is there any problem with the fact that your client made the motion to go into closed session and also that your client is a member of the commission in which he's suing? He's on both sides of the case?
No. I don't believe he's on both sides of the case. The statute 610.027 specifically says any aggrieved person, any citizen, any taxpayer has standing to bring such a lawsuit. And so he clearly has standing to bring the lawsuit. As far as making the motion, there's nothing in the statute that says, that prohibits a member of a public governmental body from suing that governmental body. But there is a provision.
A taxpayer in Missouri has far greater rights than Fotheringham versus Mellon.
I'm sorry?
You have greater rights for a taxpayer in Missouri than Fotheringham versus Mellon.
I think that's correct.
Can you address who you should have sued?
Yeah.
Well, I believe we sued who we should have sued.
Well, the traditional way that these cases are brought are against the individual commissioners. Seems to me that's particularly significant here, where one commissioner is suing the others. Why did you not bring the case in that manner and instead attempt to sue the commission as an entity? And what authority did you rely upon to do it in a non-traditional manner?
Well, I'm not convinced that it's just the non-traditional manner. I mean, the Cape Girardeau County Commission, first we look at the statute. Are they a public governmental body under the statute? And they are a governmental entity created by a statute. They also meet the more narrow definitions in the statute. They're a subdivision of the local government.
Well, that's the same for the police boards in Kansas City and St. Louis, and we have a long line of cases there where they have to be sued as individual commissioners, not as a commission as a whole.
Well, that the case that the Court of Appeals in this case relied on is a 1920 case, and boards of police commissioners are very different than a county commission. A county commission is created by statute. They're referred several times.
So are the boards of police.
Statute specifically refer to, in 49260, 624, they specifically refer to county commissions may. A county commission may.
Let me ask it this way. Sure. Are you doing this intentionally for a reason, or did you just name the commission?
No, this was intentionally done for a reason.
Okay.
There were no civil.
So you intentionally avoided the way that lawsuits have traditionally been brought, at least against police commissions?
Yes, that's correct.
Why?
Because because of the nature of the relief requested, we wanted a declaration that the county commission, as a body, violated the Sunshine Law.
Well, you can get that. I mean, even though you name the commissioners, you can get that same declaration.
That's true. There's nothing that prohibits somebody or Mr. Purcell from suing the individual commissioners. In my experience, the individuals are sued when you're seeking civil penalties or some type of injunctive relief, but mainly civil penalties. But no civil penalties were sought in this case, and this is a case which is about enforcing the Sunshine.
If you did have to sue the individual commissioners, can you address the effect that your client would be on both sides of the lawsuit then?
Well, I don't think he would be on both sides of the lawsuit. I think he would most likely have to sue a quorum of the commission.
Well, could the trial judge, based upon the tape, have entered a judgment against your client for the same violations that he discussed, items during closed session that he shouldn't have discussed?
Of course. My clients admitted that that violations occurred. That's why we have a lawsuit here. He's the only one.
Does he admit that he participated in the violations?
Yes.
How should the notice have read? What should the notice take a particular topic and tell us how the notice, you believe the law required the notice to read?
Well, if you're going into the open portion of the notice, should have had that we're going to discuss the county auditor. We're going to discuss the procedure for granting easements. We're going to discuss the sale of parkland. The closed portion of a notice, it should be specific. If we're going into closed session to discuss the sale of real estate, we cite to the real estate exception.
And if you're going into session to discuss personnel, you should
cite to the personnel
who the
exception.
Individual is you're discussing.
No. You just have to cite that you're going into closed session to discuss personnel. The point here is that public governmental bodies, far too often, they cite to the most common five or six things so they can discuss anything they want, and it doesn't give notice.
Why should you designate the specific piece of realty and not designate?
No, not the specific. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say the specific piece of realty. I mean, if you're going into closed session to discuss real estate sale, you cite to the specific exception on real estate sale.
The statute.
The statute, correct. Thank you.
May it please the court. As the court obviously has already read through these briefs and already is aware, this is a most interesting and strange case. The morning of this county commission meeting, Mr. Purcell went in, purposely taped the closed session meeting, It was made even more strange by the fact that Mr. Purcell made the motion to go into closed session for the personnel issue, made the motion to go into closed session for the real estate issue. And then as the trial judge
said, is it illegal to tape the meeting if you don't make it public? I mean, if it's supposed to be private, how is he taping it? And if he is taping it, is it then illegal to release the tape?
It's illegal to just do the act of taping it, yes, sir. Yes, it was illegal to tape the closed session.
Although there's a record made by whoever the secretary of the commission is of what's going on at the
That is correct. Session. The secretary of the commission made minutes as is appropriate in closed session meetings. This meeting has a detailed audio set of minutes that were illegally made. So, but at any rate, as the trial judge found, not only did he do this, but during this four-hour meeting, it was Mr. Purcell who was off the subject and rambling and doing this, and the presiding commissioner was trying to bring his commission back on track, and the trial judge found all of these things. It was the presiding commissioner that would not let Mr. Purcell make a motion or discourage him from making a motion because the commissioner knew that they couldn't take action because they had gone so far afield. Nobody is holding this meeting up as anything that's a monument to a model closed session. As far as the notice goes in this case, the notice was posted in the usual way the county commission posted the notices at that time, and they cited a predecessor statute and listed, as Mr. Purcell's attorney says, listed the most common reasons for going into closed session. It's my experience as an attorney that represents governments that this is not uncommon, and one of the reasons it's not uncommon is because just as happened here in this particular on that particular morning on April 17th, an issue came up that the council or that the commission needed to discuss in closed session, unfortunately enough, the notice was published and it was done in proper form. And I would also point out respectfully to the court that in the amicus brief of the Missouri Press Association, that notice probably satisfied the most difficult group there is to satisfy on sunshine law issues, and that's the Missouri Press Association. Even they said that it was an adequate notice. It gave the public notice of the potential for going into closed session. Then, as we find as we do these, what happened is that Mr. Purcell correctly made a specific motion to go into closed session for personnel and a real estate issue. So the way that, in my experience, the government works is that the government will post, and we get these, the notice provision is found on the Attorney General's website, and at least the clients that I represent use the notice that's posted on that is the sample that's on the Attorney General's website. So that the way this works is that you post the notice that you may go into closed session for a number of reasons, not knowing what may occur. Then the member who makes that motion makes a specific motion. We're going to talk, I moved to go in for closed session. I moved to go in for real estate. This is extremely common among the clients that I represent. Then, depending on the type of an issue it is, we are then under the requirement that we quickly release that information in the form of minutes. For a real estate purchase issue, for example, we have to release it after the purchase is made. For litigation issue, there's a time frame. For employment issues, there's...
And is it your position that what happened in the closed meeting was within those narrow confines as to which notice was given and the motion was made?
I agree with the trial judge.
The easement and the other issues, were those within the confines permitted?
No, I agree with the trial judge. I think that the... Mr. Purcell led his fellow members into a broad-ranging area that should not have been discussed in closed session. But I also agree with the trial judge in that he examined every remedy possible that he could have given. He looked and he said, you know, the commission varied widely from what that motion said. And if I find that they took an action, then I'm going to consider setting it aside as required by statute. He looked at the potential for declaratory judgment, and he found that there was no legal right matter to declare.
So does a declaratory judgment only extend to future matters, or can you declare that what he's asking this court to approve is declaring a past action improper under the law? Are there cases that address whether that's an appropriate subject for a declaratory judgment?
I believe that the cases that we cited under declaratory judgment deal with that, in that declaring a past action, the courts have said, provides no useful legal purpose. The purpose of a declaratory judgment is to declare a legal right or position. And so, yes, I would take that position that the cases do say that
Wait a minute. The most common usage of declaratory judgments is to determine whether, for example, coverage in an insurance policy, something that happened in the past, is covered by this policy. That's not necessarily predicting the future or some kind of future action. Declaratory judgment, it seems to me, is just a declaration without some other form of relief attached to it. For example, when a court finds that a person has been damaged in an automobile accident and says that the person is owed $5,000, inherent in that judgment is a declaration that what was done was wrong. And it seems to me that a declaratory judgment is just that piece of it without the other piece.
I agree. That's exactly right. But the distinction I would make is that you are declaring a legal right. You may be declaring something that happened in the past, but you're declaring a future legal right between the parties, and that's the real purpose of declaratory judgment. I think saying a court would never be asked to declare that last Tuesday I did something wrong unless that affected a future legal right between me and another party.
Well, that's precisely what the petitioner, it seems to me in this case, probably wants to establish, is that having done this wrong, we look to the future to make sure we don't do that again. And I'm wondering what you make of the liberal construction language of the statute that says that the public policy of the state is for open meetings, etc., and that the provisions of the statute be liberally construed and their exceptions strictly construed to promote this public policy. I mean, and now you want to take a narrow view of what a declaratory judgment is going to declare. I'm not so sure that you can have it that way.
I don't think that it's a narrow view, because I do not believe, as the trial judge did not believe, that there is a legal right or a legal relationship to declare. There was no evidence in any form in this summary judgment action, no suggestion that there was an ongoing problem, that there was a future problem that might occur. This was strictly what occurred on April 17th.
Would it not be helpful to the county commission if the court were to declare that the topic that was discussed was beyond the notice and therefore should have been moved into an open session? Session be opened when they moved to a topic that wasn't in the notice?
And perhaps we should look then at Judge Mitchell's trial court decision, because in his findings of fact, that's exactly what he did. He went through a detailed analysis of what went on April 17th, and he said that the commission varied widely from the subjects, and they should establish procedures, and they should not follow Purcell's action. They should follow Chapter 610. The only distinction, the only complaint that Mr. Purcell has with Judge Mitchell's decision, it seems to me, is that Judge Mitchell did not take that additional step and say, after finding all of these problems, I'm going to go down through and analyze the things I can do under Chapter 610, and I find that I can't set aside an action. There's no future action that might happen, so there's nothing I can enjoin. There's no civil penalties. And the most difficult one, and I agree it's the most difficult one to analyze, he went on to say that that there's really nothing to declare as far as future. I think he did the job that the court has just inquired of me about. He admonished all future commissions that you want to stay on subject, and just because one member goes off, don't right. follow
is
them
it,
into
is
that.
Is it your position then that, based upon the judgment that the trial court made, that if all this is just about punishing them more later, they've got everything they need because the judge made those factual findings? He just states that they're not entitled to a declaratory judgment on any issue raised by plaintiff, meaning at this time, I assume.
I think that's a fair statement of my position, yes, sir.
Does the statutory structure put duties on the chair of the... Because I've been in a number of meetings, countless number, I actually can't count, where the chair doesn't control the meeting and the chair doesn't say, we're off, this is out of order, let's stay on topic, this is what... Are there any obligations in the statute? In the statute to say the chair must assert a discipline on the group in executive session?
There is nothing that I recall in the approximate 30 sections of Chapter 610 that distinguish the chair from the other members. It makes the same requirement on all the members, to my memory.
Can you discuss whether or not the proper party was named as a defendant?
Yes, I can. As has been pointed out earlier, the times I've sued county commissions or boards or whatever, it has always been pretty much black letter law that you sue the individual members of these boards. Our position, both at the trial level and in the appellate court, was that this was strictly a political or a strategic or a publicity strategy that the individual commission members had to be sued because the thing called the county commission, as was so appropriately pointed out by the Court of Appeals, doesn't, the statute specifically says it doesn't have a right to bring suit in its own name. It says it has right to bring suit in the name of the county, so that conversely, it seems to follow clearly that if you can't bring suit in your own name, how can you be sued?
Well, we're looking at the open meetings, open records statute, and I'm wondering if you can point us to a provision that requires the plaintiff to sue to say that they must sue the individuals and not the commission as commission. Because it defines public governmental body broadly enough to include the commission, does it not?
There is no such section that requires you to sue the individual commission members, but when the legislature wrote the Sunshine Law, surely the legislature did not mean to abandon our 100 years of law on legal entities. You have to sue a legal entity whether you're suing it under the Sunshine Law or under the workers' compensation statute. All statutes provide that we can bring suits against individuals, but that...
Well, let me ask you, I mean, very specifically, isn't the Cape County Commission a public governmental body?
Absolutely. It is covered under the Sunshine Law. They have to do things under the Sunshine Law, the same as the Jefferson City Council, the same as the Jefferson City Planning and Zoning Commission, the same as the Board of Police Commissioners of St. Louis. All of these things have to follow the Sunshine Law. But when a trial judge, or when a trial attorney gets the case, he needs to look at our law of legal entities and say, this group has to follow the Sunshine Law. Now, how do I sue them?
Let me ask you a question in this way. Does it make a practical difference, in this case, a practical difference, in the manner in which the plaintiff filed a suit against the commission instead of against their commission, against the various commissioners in their governmental capacity?
If there's ever been a case that it makes a practical difference, this is it. Because had the suit been brought properly, it would have been Jay Purcell versus Jay Purcell and the other commissioners.
Would he have had to sue himself, or could he just, I'm sorry, sue the other two?
He certainly could have, that would have been a very interesting. So he could have brought Jay Purcell versus Gerald Jones and Mr. Bach. That would have been brought an interesting motion for dismissing for lack of an indispensable party.
Let me follow up in this way. Generally, I think it's nonsense when a group tries to sue itself, which is this case has some aspect of that in it. On the other hand, if you are a member of a public body and believe the other members are not acting in the correct way, how else would you pursue the issue?
The statute specifically provides for that in 610.022, I believe, where it says that when you find yourself as a member of a public body in that unfortunate position, that you put on the record that you object to the illegal activity in closed session or otherwise, that you are allowed to participate and protect your constituents, but then you are later able to bring your complaint in its various forms. Mr. Purcell did not avail himself of 610.022.
How could he bring his complaint later then? If he'd done that, say, how would he then be able to later bring a complaint?
I think he would have made his, had he made his record under 610.022, then the appropriate way later would have been to sue the individual commissioners who were the offending parties in the action, hypothetically, if that had occurred.
Are there any further questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. To follow up on the questioning that just ended, this is not a case where someone slipped and fell on the county court steps, in which case you would sue the county itself. You would sue the county of Cape. This is a case where the Cape Girardeau County Commission, as Respondents' Counsel just admitted, is a public governmental body.
Let me ask you this. If the commissioners are acting in a manner that is contrary to the Sunshine Law, that would not be a lawful action, correct?
Correct.
So it would be ultra vires. It's an unlawful action, right?
Correct.
Okay, and nobody in their government capacity can commit an unlawful activity. The law looks at that as an individual activity, correct?
Correct.
So then it's their individual capacities that you would have to bring this lawsuit, not their governmental capacity.
Well, I think that depends on the type of remedy that you're seeking and the type of case.
Well, it depends on your allegation and what you're asserting. You're asserting that they did acts that were beyond what they were authorized to do in their governmental capacity.
No. They're authorized to have meetings.
Yes,
they
but
conducted
you're saying
the meeting
what
in violation
the problem
of 610.
Was at the meeting. You're alleging that they conducted the meeting illegally by discussing open matters in the closed portion.
Correct.
That is something they're not authorized by law to do as county commissioners, right?
Correct.
So then they must be doing that in their individual capacity, and that's the way they have to be sued.
And what's the judicial enforcement mechanism and statutory structure to enforce that?
Well,
it's Chapter 610. And Chapter 610 provides the exact framework and remedies and scheme for doing that. And it specifically says in 610.027 that remedy is against public governmental bodies.
Yeah, but the question here is who the proper parties is that you're suing for this type of relief.
Doesn't 610.028 say any public governmental body may provide for the legal defense of any member charged with a violation of these sections? So it assumes that you may sue the individual member there, doesn't it, for violating?
Of course you could sue an individual.
But you're not seeking any monetary damages. You're seeking a declaratory judgment that the notice was invalid.
How come your client hasn't waived his claim of failure to object to any the activity when it occurred?
Because
the statute specifically provides for a way for him to object and even advise the prosecuting attorney. But yet, even in lieu of objecting, he participated or led on this illegal activity. Why hasn't he waived his claim for failure to follow the statutory remedy for when this occurs?
Well, I think the absolute defense offered in the statute is against anybody it provides a defense and provides a mechanism for the public governmental body to pay for that defense. But it's certainly no bar upon that person suing for enforcement. And
why not? It provides him a remedy. In other words, if you're there in a closed meeting, you have a remedy. You can object.
Is that a remedy?
Presumably,
is that a remedy or a defense?
It's not a remedy. It's a defense. It's specifically a defense. The remedies are in the other portion of the statute. I mean, the line of questioning was, yes, a person could object during the meeting. And we're not just talking about meetings here. We're also talking about the notice. And if we're talking sunshine law, we're talking about records and access to records. And if a governmental body, or in this case, we're talking about a 3-member body. What if we're talking about a 10-member body or a 7-member body, and one of the members objects, they can object. And if the rest of the body disagrees, the body as a whole, then their remedy is to complain to the Attorney General's office or to file for judicial enforcement. And that's what happened in this case.
Apart from some of these legal niceties, I want to ask you a real practical question here. As I understand, there was no action taken during this closed session, and that all that you allege occurred was discussion about things that weren't properly subject to discussion in a closed meeting. Is that right?
Correct.
So if we make a declaration, there would be no action would be subject to challenge or to be undone, no effect there. Because it's discussion, it just, I mean, it's kind of an ethereal.
Well, it's not
concept.
Look,
I mean, you got
this type of
saying, or what you're asking is, you talked about things you shouldn't have talked about.
Right. The law means what it says it means, and the courts are the bodies that should enforce the law. That's the scheme set up.
Can you go back and take any meeting? And you could just ask for a declaratory judgment. How about this meeting? How about this one? How about this one? Go to every meeting that's ever been held by any commission. I mean, when you're looking back and just saying, tell us if we did it right before, as opposed to seeking some relief in the future or seeking to show them how they're about to hold a meeting and you know they're going to hold it incorrectly and you're asking the court to order them to hold it correctly, is different than going back and saying, well, gosh, you did it wrong here, but you're not seeking any remedy that the statute provides.
Well, there's a statute of limitations in the Sunshine Law,
fine,
so it would have to be within the statute of limitations. But if they did violate the law, then yes, and you met all the requirements.
There's lots of remedies you could do, but you're not asking for any of those remedies, so I'm still not clear why you're not just asking for an advisory opinion as opposed to declaratory judgment about whether what they did before was okay or not, since you're not asking for any relief from it or any damages or any costs or anything else.
Well, we're asking the court to call a Sunshine Law violation a Sunshine Law violation.
Yeah,
and that, in the remedies portion, it is very clear when leveling a knowing or purposeful civil penalty, the court is to take into account previous Sunshine Law violations. So if this court reverses the trial court and the Cape County Commission continues to violate the Sunshine Law in the manner that they have, then that should be heavily taken into account by a future court in a future lawsuit, and hopefully will change the behavior.
Why couldn't you offer the judgment that the trial court entered here based upon the facts that he found? What more do you get from an appellate decision? Because this the way I read it, the trial judge said there was some stuff that happened that was wrong.
Well, the trial court said, in my opinion, 1 + 1 = 3. Yes, they violated the law. No, they didn't mean to do so. So no, they didn't violate the law. That's what the trial court opinion says. And they specifically say the notice doesn't violate the law, which it does. And they admit that they violated the law in the closed session, but then write it off as there was no knowing or purposeful violation, so it really wasn't a law violation. So this court should reverse the trial court.
Are there any further questions? Thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you.